Horses with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
From Keeneland, Breeders' Cup 2022. A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, SteveBick.com, where you can also find, as of yesterday at about 6 o'clock, give or take, the Breeders' Cup betting companion. And it is up and ready for your perusal and notes and adding it, augmenting your own handicapping for tomorrow. 24 hours away from the start, Future Stars Friday, and certainly all systems go. Glorious, absolutely beautiful day. All of the nonsense from the last couple of weeks about weather concerns, those are completely allayed, and here we are, Hammer, and now it's just a matter of making some decisions, planning, and basically laying out bankroll choices, and then cashing tickets.
T-minus one day, just like you said, and I was fortunate enough, I guess you could call that, to get up at 4:30 this morning and took a ride out here with a friend, and we were here early in the pitch dark. And we were rewarded as we were hanging out on the rail over by the barns over there on Rice Road and watching the horses come off on the track and get their final exercise in. Obviously, nothing strenuous was done today, but a whole line of them went by. We got to see Flightline. He was like the second horse on the track this morning, and he went by, and he takes it a while to get going. He likes to stand around a little bit and check out his surroundings, and he jogged by, and Terry Finley of West Point was standing next to me, and I asked him. I said, "Is it possible that he could have grown since I saw him last at Del Mar this summer?" He goes, "Oh yeah, he's filling out even more." So it was kind of cool to see him go by. I put a little video on Twitter on that, and then we got to see Life is Good and Rich Strike and Loa West and a slew of others go by in the dark this morning, which was very cool. And then as we made our way back over to the front side, just like Steve said, as the sun came up and the early morning sun and the fog with the leaves that are on the trees here, and it's a gorgeous sight. And I'm like a tourist here in essence.
It's all new to you.
I have never been to the backside of Keeneland with horses on it, and I've never been really on the apron at all. And to walk, from the finish line up the stretch in the fog and watch the horses go by, wow. I understand what people say about Keeneland here, about being a special spot. And I haven't even seen a race yet, so I got a good feel. And apparently the leaves and the weather is not normal for this time of year. Ben Huffman, the racing secretary, he just told me, he goes, normally the leaves are gone and it's 40 degrees and misty this time of year. So knock on wood and we'll take what we can get. But anyway, it's getting close, and you can feel, haven't had that feel yet where we were, getting close to a big day. But walking through the grandstand this morning in the apron, you could just feel it turned up a little bit of a notch, like we're getting close to something big.
Well, no doubt. James Scully ambling in, and we expected James early to sit and join us, and we'll do our handicapping session with James. Use his visit to also talk about quickly last night's activity, which was the National Turf Writers and Broadcasters annual gathering and award session. The honorees, there was actually some scratches, much like last year when Lenny Shulman and I both ended up unable to get to Del Mar for a pair of health reasons. Similarly, Kieran McLaughlin, not health-related, Kieran, who was being really honored with the Bill Mooney Award, Kieran, along with a bunch of New York Racing Office and New York Racing Association personnel and other trainers, were waylaid getting out of New York yesterday, didn't get to Lexington until quite late, and so Kieran missed it. His family was there. Neil accepted for him. It was really sweet. Todd and Tracy Pletcher on hand, as well as, just a bunch, two tables worth of McLaughlins, because, of course, they're from right here. Barbara Livingston is sick, and they didn't specify, but I'm guessing she's got a COVID issue. And so she's quarantined, and just the flu. Okay, good. Barbara couldn't come to be honored, and that was too bad. Jim McInvale, he couldn't come. I'm sure he was in a better mood last night than he was on Tuesday night, when he basically was in the same form he is famous for with some of his trainers historically, and
screaming "F.U." Adam.
He actually did a taped message to the audience last night, and he actually tongue in cheek. He said, "You know, racing needs more controversy. I found myself in a little bit of controversy right here in Philadelphia." It was actually kind of clever, but. So a couple of scratches, but Chris Lincoln, who got the McKay Award, which I received last year, and was the organization was nice enough to ask me to present to Chris and also take the opportunity to express my appreciation. But to introduce Chris Lincoln, really an honor. And Chris, what he did at ESPN with the Thoroughbred Digest, it was basically a forerunner of a lot of things that are happening on the internet now. He created that. It was innovative at the time. It was the only place that on a nationwide basis all of us could watch races from the week before. There was no RTN, there was no Cal Racing replays, there was no nothing. And I mean, there were a few racetracks where you could go to a replay center and punch up a race, but it not like the convenience we have today. So Chris Lincoln providing a huge service for 20 years to a whole generation, frankly, my generation of horse player. I graduated college in 82. He started in 82 with it. And went over 20 years. And so Chris Lincoln, a legend too in Tulsa television, and one of the first media companies of its kind in sports. Really a pleasure for me to introduce him last night. Mike Welch and Tom Padula with the Walter Haight Award. Also Jay Hubdy and Frank Angst. For last year's Breeders' Cup Writing Awards feature and spot writing. I mentioned Tom Padula, yep, yeah. Who shared there was a dead heat in the vote with him and Mike Welch. Yeah. So really a really pleasant evening.
I thought all those, I always loved the speeches at the awards dinner. You did a great job with the introduction to Chris, and it was fitting to have Chris come up there last because he really just brought the room down. I just really enjoyed listening to him talk. He started off, just like his typical style and just really self-deprecating and giving people a hard time.
Yeah,
and
just famous for that.
Telling great stories. So really enjoying seeing Chris Lincoln, seeing he's still, going and strong and everything.
70 something. The only
74. And having not seen him for, probably 10 years or something, mm-hmm. and having worked with him and Tom Dawson, who did all the producing for a lot of his shows, we used to get the calls, who's in this race, who's in this race? And to see him, I thought he looked great.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like you said, when he started talking, it was like flashback, just like he's always been.
Yeah, right.
Very comfortable and, making fun of himself, making fun of other, he had some great little one-liners he did. But as you said, Steve, about the kind of pioneering, I can remember, wherever I was, whenever that show was on, oh, my gosh, calling home or something and say, hey, could somebody put a, because you didn't have TiVo.
I can remember, like, taping it. with the VHS.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, right after. Yeah,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
I would call home
sure.
and somebody, you know, my mom, hey, mom, can you put the tape in and hit the button, you know, the little button on the left? Yeah, when the red light comes on, hit this so I could watch this show.
Exactly. We
right?
All
everybody.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Not
too
many shows, but you had to watch that because, you know, it kept you up. I was on the West Coast. It kind of kept you up with what was going on.
And a great point of that. Yeah. You couldn't really see the West Coast racing very readily. If they might have had a telecast with it on, but Chris Lincoln's show always gave you an opportunity to just catch up. And, you know, he brought so much personality to it.
Well, he did. And I think he brought racing, you know, more. It took it from like a global thing to being in your living room, and it made you aware of all the racetracks around the country that all these big events, and not only did you get to see the race, you got to get kind of introduced to the racetracks, and I thought that was pretty cool.
A lot of fun. The Breeders' Cup opinions, James, and before we talk specifics, I want to do a little bankroll planning session and explain to everybody how, you know, what you budget, mm-hmm. and you send it in, so I mean people can adjust their bankroll approach and you know the breadth of it, or there's going to be plenty of people who, you know, have a limited budget, but give us a little bit of a primer for how you approach these 2 days and how you budget things out.
Well, it's a little bit of a different approach from Friday to Saturday. You know, Friday there's five races, but just two of them I really have a strong opinions, and I'm thinking about just trying to work. And, you know, it's the second and the fifth one. You know, it's the juvenile fillies and it's the juvenile turf. So I'm probably going to work some pick threes out like that because I can just play them for bigger denominations. There might be some chalk around them. Obviously, you got Cave Rock in the mix and others. And so that's going to be sort of my strategy on that. And make sure to play those two horses straight. Saturday, a little bit, I'm going to be messing in some pick five pools, and we'll take a look at pick threes, but we'll also perhaps play a little bit more vertical exotics with some long shots I like. Neither one of my plays on Friday are going to be double-digit odds, for example, but there's some horses on Saturday that I like. May not be my top pick, but I'm definitely going to, you know, heck, we've talked about this before, Steve. You've told the story. You know, the trifecta key with a long shot is one of the best is a great play in the Breeders' Cup because of the depth of the field and the enormous value involved. You know, two of the last three favorites to win the Classic had 30 some to one shots run second. So, you know, there's even with a horse like Cave Rock or Flight Line, there's the potential for value underneath.
What? Let me ask. So you mentioned, you know, a couple. Pick fives, a couple, you know,
sure.
going vertical. I'm pretty much a horizontal guy, and I was just counting them up. On Saturday, we've got three pick fives, and we have one, two, three normal pick fours, and we have that turf pick four. And so, you know, I play, but I'm not a huge guy, but I do like to, you know, on these days, step it up a little bit, and I try and discipline myself to, after I've done the work and know where the races I like a single or two around. Are you for like picking out like say one pick five and just say I'm going for it
instead? No,
no, you're not. Okay.
No, I mean not typically. I mean there might be different. There might be day in day out races, examples like that. But no, I'm looking at like multiple pick five tickets where I'm leveraging either two or three opinions in that sequence and spreading around them. And then I might have some, you know, back when I when I'm leveraging that opinion, I'm not going to be like having two singles in the sequence, but I'll have two tickets that have like a single per se.
But what I meant was, in other words, let's say you save $1,000 to spend on the pick fives,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, spending $300 on each of them, or you rather say, you know what, I want to hit this one. I'm gonna make, you know, take the $1,000 and go for this one pick five because mm-hmm. I think that's where I'm more, you know, I like my horses better.
Absolutely,
that.
Yeah, and you know, it's just, but it's still like you could have a stronger opinion on one horse, but like be narrower around it, or just have smaller fields per se. And you know, like the late pick five's got the Classic involved in it, so. you know, that take, you might have a stronger opinion. I might like love Ness. Like Ness is going to be a single for me. I do like her, but you know, with Flightline, he's going to be a key, you know, for that late pick five. But I'll have like a saver ticket where I use Epicenter. I can't believe I'm still forgotten.
That's right. Now,
I get a little bit, it's like, get close to these events, and it's like on Derby Day, I'm like standing there, I'm like, that Japanese horse, you know, I've said Crown Prince 100,000 times over like 2 weeks before it, and I'm like, get a little bit of tongue-tied. But yeah, I think the thing with Flightline is all these like discussions about like pace and trip and all that might be moot, might not matter, he might settle beautifully regardless of where he is. But I hear a lot of people saying he's going to sit on the hip of Life Is Good, and I'm like, what if he's going head and head with them? It just changes the dynamics. He's never been in that situation. He's definitely not been in a situation where, hey, when he makes his move, he just doesn't blow by a horse. And, you know, Life Is Good is, I think, a brilliant mile. You know, I don't think he's going to, per se, you know, that stretch should be a question. He'd really need to be clear to me to get the mile and a quarter effectively, so that's not going to happen. But he could give Flightline a little bit of a tussle, and then you can have Taba doing that as well on the far turn.
A quick note back to the reference to the price in a – in a tri-key, for instance, and it's not limited to the tri-key, but I'm going to bring back from 2 years ago in two of the most obvious races that were run. In the Distaff, Monomoy Girl was even money. Dunbar Road third at 26-1. It did have Valiance, you know, who was a little tricky second, but not, you know, not
she got bet down a little bit, though. She was a price on the morning line.
Well, she was 14-1 ultimately, but 26-1 for Dunbar Road, and the tri paid 131. And then an hour later in the Classic, where Authentic ends up, you know, your winner at 4-1, and of course that was a weird board because there were four horses that were all
just a lot
7
took
to
a bunch
2.
Of money.
Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. In fact, here it is: Authentic was 4-1, Improbable was 7-2. Maxim Security was 9-2, and Tis the Law was 3-1. So, I mean, the public was confused. But either way, he ended up Authentic, Improbable, Global Campaign at 25-1/3, and the try paid $168. These are 50-cent tries, right? I'm talking about. These aren't even dollar tries. So, you know, for the 50-cent increment, you can spread around widely. In, you know, building a ticket like that, you can also do the same thing with 50-cent pick threes. You're going to refer to one or two there. You know, from the Juvenile 2 years ago, Essential Quality, your winner. And, of course, Jackie's Warrior faltered at under even money. I think people forget.
4-5.
Yeah. And exactly. Hot Rod Charlie was 94-1 that day and ended up second. Keep Me in Mind third at 31-1, but Essential Quality paid 940 to win. The tri paid 1900. So, you know, there's plenty of room here, even if you acknowledge and are, you know,
I know
saying,
somebody that hit that tri because they like Keep Me in Mind, and they played him, yep, like in like sort of a wheel format with Essential Quality and maybe somebody else, but they wheeled him like second and third with all. Because they really thought that he, and I think Diodoro had two in that race. They liked them both at a big price.
That's exactly right. There was also in the Dirt Mile, you had Nick's Go, even, well, 2-1, and Jesus's Team 62-1. He ended up with the $109 exacta with the favorite, and the try, which also had Sharp Samurai. 50-cent try was $616. So the point here is two messages. You don't have to beat every favorite. You don't have to throw every favorite out. You can acknowledge the horses that are absolutely logical, and if they run their race, they're going to be tough to beat. But you then start to play around, and you've got the opportunity with the 10-cent superfecta increment and with the 50-cent try increment to use more horses than you would during the week.
And I, since I don't play the verticals that much, I have to go to my handy dandy wager calculator to figure this out.
Absolutely.
So
I use that.
Right. So they just show you. You think it's all this. Oh, it's going to cost a ton of money. So I just punched in for a dollar trifecta. You can pick three horses on the win end and six horses in the other two places. $60.
Yeah. Well, that's so, well,
at $30 for 50 cents.
That's 30. One way to buy. Yeah.
No, I'm just saying, you know, yeah. Just for if you want to take a stab at doing something like that, it's not $300.
It's not, yeah.
And I mean, and that was for a dollar, so you could do that for 50 cents. I mean, you could probably pick three horses and do eight for even.
Well, that's a terrific point, because if you let's say, you know, you go through the 14 races, and you know, there's, let's say, five races that you've got a standout opinion that there's a horse that, you know, that you really are excited about betting and utilizing. Well, if you're doing it that, if you do it for the 3x5x4, that's $30 times five races, $150. You can have a lot of fun. You need to hit one of them, you know, to bring back probably, you know, 2,500, 3,000, who knows, depending on, you know, what else is involved. Basically, I mean, just look at some of these, you know, at any of these. Go look at the charts from any Breeders' Cup. You're going to see the same format. There's going to be middle price long shots and bombs in superfectas, not in every race, but certainly based on these field sizes. And what feels like some competitive races. I this morning, I finally finished my Friday write-up and posted it. And I struggled with the Philly main track and the Philly turf tomorrow, mm-hmm. way more than I expected to. And I think they are both very, very difficult. And actually, I reached for some unusual. I ended up using some horses. I saw where David Aragona actually said something that I was feeling as well. That when you sat down and made some final analysis, you ended up surprised at some horses that you utilized. Mm-hmm. And for instance, you mentioned the Juvenile Fillies. Let's start talking a little bit, James, about opinions for tomorrow.
Sure.
I mean, just to throw this out, for instance, the more I looked at the Juvenile Fillies, the more I realize 9 of the 14 are either speed horses or pace pressers.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've got your Brisnet. I want you to do your Brisnet treatise as well for those that are utilizing maybe for the first time the Brisnet PPs. But 9 of the 14 horses in this field are front-end types. So I said, wait a minute. There is no way I am not looking to the back of the field and trying to find the horses that have the best chance.
Or at least mid-pack, yeah.
Mid-pack, and well, I mean, chop-chop, and I don't want 4-1, but I don't see how, you know, chop-chop isn't a serious consideration. You certainly got the right guy in Rosario to pass them all if that's what it's going to take. But even some other, frankly, goofy horses ended up bubbling up. I'll give you the craziest one that shocked me that I ended up putting in the tabs. Alma Rosa and Atomically, who mm-hmm. I had no interest in last Tuesday when pre-entries were drawn. And I said, wait a minute. I mean, this field's going to spread out and there's going to be room for horses to come off the pace. So I'm going to use three horses that are going to be rallying late. I looked hard and long at and Tell Me No Lies, who I just think is a little bit too slow.
Me too.
But there's a couple of horses that Alma Rosa, go take a close look at that last race.
Well, let me just provide just a little bit of pushback.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a 14 horse field, and I'm just like looking at the first seven. You know, You're My Girl almost, I just thought, was on the lead by default last time. She's more of like likes to sit, I think, right off it. And the only other horse in there, Wonder Wheel, is sort of a similar thing, I think, in that she broke from the rail. They were aggressive. I don't think she's going to be on the lead. And I look outside, and there's a lot of those fillies, too. I'm a little bit worried about somebody flashing in the front and getting that, like, lone speed trip. And I'll tell you right now, a candidate I have is Grand Love. And she sure might not be good enough, but that was a horse I was looking at. And another horse I'm looking at in sort of a same vein, whether she's going to be forward, I think, is Leave No Trace. and those are two bombers. But I agree, Chop Chop is definitely my top pick. I'm going to look to single her and some like pick threes and play her. And the thing about her is that I thought she was in trouble in that Alcibiades when she came out of the gate a half step slow. She was 11th in the early going. It was her first dirt race, but I thought she ran really well to make her move into contention, sort of grinded her way through traffic, and that was a great experience. When I watched that replay, she's big. She's got a long stride. She's a filly that should move forward off that Alcibiades. And so that's sort of the way I saw it. The thing with Atomically is that she was so much better than the floor of the bed, Colder, whoever won. So she definitely has some talent. But I just wonder if Lee Saez, he's so aggressive, he might be thinking what I'm thinking and really hustle her.
I don't think he needs to. I think she's one of the horses that could sit, sixth or seventh and let and let the speed unfold. Yes. And draft. He's very good on that trip as well. So I certainly from a pace standpoint, a front end horse to me that becomes, if that materializes and if somebody does somehow get to the turn early and gets to relax on the backstretch for a little bit, to me it's You're My Girl. Well, the Terranova.
Absolutely. Now if you go back and watch that film, if you look quickly just at the figs and you go, chocolate gelato, she looks really good, go back and watch that race where You're My Girl, Turn Her For Home, it looks like chocolate gelato is just going to roll right on by and keep on going. And You're My Girl just hangs in there and hangs in there. And actually, inside the 16th pole, makes a little bit of a run. But, just stays with Chocolate Gelato all the way down the lane. And I was just very impressed with that. And like you said, I think she just kind of ended up on the lead. I don't think that was, necessarily the plan. She's got enough speed to be there if she wants to be, but I don't see her needing to go to the front. But I was just really impressed out that
she's taking a lot of money in both races too. She was favored the first time out. It was a state bred, but even last time, I know it was a short field, but I think she could be like less than 10-1. I think a lot of people are keen on that You're My Girl. It'll be interesting to see how the odds shake up, because here we're Steve and I both talking about Chop Chop getting perhaps that trip, and she's 4-1 on the morning line, and if she opens up 5-2, immediately it's a bitter disappointment.
Yes.
The other race I really have a strong opinion in is the Juvenile Turf. And to me, when I watched that Zuma Beach, I just was like, good luck beating. I just don't think any – I knew right then and there I didn't think any of the Americans could beat him in this race.
Paxawalop, you mean?
Paxawalop, yeah. I'm sorry, Paxawalop. I was didn't know who the Euros would be, but I definitely respect Silver Knot, but I think Paxawalop is – what I really am impressed by that horse is the turn of foot that he has showed in his last three starts. I love, I thought he won with, real grace and style with more left in the tank. And I just think his tactical speed is going to ensure a good trip. Doesn't hurt to me having 27-time Breeders' Cup race winner Mike Smith on him. And at anything close to 6-1, I think it's real value.
Well, just so you know, like I said, this is my first trip here. The first picture of a horse that I took yesterday coming out of the paddock, I was saying, and I go, just beautiful with the trees in the background, and they're coming out, and I go, I know that kid. And they come out, and then Jeff comes behind him, and I go, hey, there you go. And I sent him the picture, and I saw him this morning. I go, thanks for the picture. Beautiful looking horse.
Beautiful.
And he went by this morning early on, and they were out watching him. And Jeff I've known for a long time, and he's just feeling great about the horse.
I thought his first two wins were like he just sort of like overpowered them. I thought he took it to another level last time. I really thought he showed a level of professionalism that bodes well for him for shipping in here. One point I'm going to make real quick, sort of along the lines we're talking about betting strategy and such, is lukewarm favorites. The last favorite to win a Breeders' Cup race that was 3-1 or higher was Mendelssohn in 2017. And my colleague Vance Hansen wrote a piece on it where horses that are 3-1 or higher and are favored a low win percentage. I mean, you know, all the favorite win percentage is, you know, shorter priced horses. They're much more dependable. And I think one of the races clearly on Saturday that's going to have a lukewarm favorite, and your guess is as good as mine. I mean, it could be the morning line choice, but it's going to be the first race, the Philly Amer Sprint. And I'm really, I think, eligible to poke holes in a lot of those fillies. You know, Goodnight Olive, I mean, she's just, like, raced so sparingly. I just wonder how fit and, you know, just how frail. I'm worried about her frailty a little bit.
Well, but as it happens, I mean, there's certainly a theory for anybody that's a sheet user.
Yeah.
The very effective and kind of a maxim is ouchie horses run well fresh. I mean, that's a standard. And as it happens, the sprint, historically, this has been muted in recent years as horsemen have put more distance between starts. But for the longest time, the races in the Breeders' Cup that had winners coming from the longest layoffs
right.
was always the sprint.
Right.
Always.
Absolutely. No, and I agree with that. But to me, the one thing, I guess maybe I should have led with this instead of that, is that in all those races, too, she's able just to sit this, I think, ideal trip where she's just, like, right off to speed. And she doesn't have to negotiate any traffic or anything. And I'm just saying, hey, what if she's seventh or eighth or further back? I mean, she's trying to win for the first time, really, from a different difficult spot. The filly that I really like in there, and I'm definitely going to be looking to play, you know, tries and, you know, and bets vertical exotics with her underneath, is number 11, Wicked Halo. And this is a filly that has run four straight for Steve Asmussen. Mm-hmm. But I think in her two stakes wins at Churchill this summer and even in that Prioris at Saratoga in early September, no way she was good enough at that time to win this race Saturday. To me, I see this race just sort of really shaping up like the 2018 edition, which really didn't have a clear-cut favorite either on paper. And you had a three-year-old filly who was coming off stakes wins at Presque Isle Downs and Woodbine that clearly weren't good enough to win the Philly Amer Sprint. And she absolutely peaked at Keeneland, winning the Raven Run by five lengths like Wicked Halo did. And her figure was like lower than Wicked Halo's and carried that form forward. These sprinters can get really good in a short window. Shamrock Rose never won again.
Bar of gold.
Right. But, and to me, Wicked Halo, that was a huge improvement. I would have been dubious of her chances if she had drawn an inside post in this race, because one thing in the sprint and in the dirt Philly Amer sprint, I don't like inside post in those races. I just watch too many races at Keeneland. If you have speed from the inside, it's different. But, so being drawn outside Wicked Halo, she's going to be double-digit odds. I like her chances in there.
Well, there's no coincidence that the Steve Asmussen barn is all of it, you know, the last 6 weeks or so has just been on fire. They are actually through Saratoga coming in. So, you know, these guys know when it counts.
Now, I'm not a real keen fan of playing guys that are cold, and I don't believe in the dew factor as a bettor. I think it's a terrible way. This horse or this person is due. That's a terrible way to bet. You want to bet against that. But Tyler Gaffleone is 0-34 in the Breeders' Cup. But I'm hoping if he doesn't break through on Friday, because he's on Wonder Wheel and he missed a couple of other mouths, but it will be Wicked Awa.
And he's been on fire right here.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's won nine. He just seemed like he was just in Florida like 3 or 4 years ago, and he already has nine titles at Churchill Downs. I interviewed him yesterday and looked
nine?
That stuff up. Yeah.
That would have taken
They got three meets a year now,
that's
and
right.
he's got nine. I think he's won six in a row or something.
So he's quietly kind of taken over in the Midwest here,
absolutely.
For sure. So, yeah, but like I said, why wouldn't you want to take a horse that's peaking as opposed to, today's the day, today's the day.
Right, right.
The Philly and Mare Sprint had, in its run, to a certain point, up until, in fact, Shamrock Rose's win, had a bugaboo against three-year-old fillies
right.
beating the elders. And, of course, it basically peaked at Del Mar with the Bar of Gold win when Unique Bella, it seemed on paper that Unique Bella just was,
right.
she was going to break. I remember having this conversation.
None of them had won, right?
No, yeah. Every single short-priced three-year-old filly had gotten beat. And then suddenly you had Shamrock Rose, Kafefi, and Gamine.
Three
basically
of the last four.
Three straight. So the three-year-old, it's one thing about this event. This is the 39th edition. And there were certain things that get ingrained in your head, much like the old school derby. Oh, a gelding can't win the derby.
A horse with one, a horse with three white socks can't be good.
Be very careful about. That's funny. Be very careful about having preconceived maxims ingrained in your head. Obviously, three-year-old fillies can win this race. And there's like six of them in here, as it happens. Most of them are prices like Hot Pepper and Sterling Silver and Chi-Town Lady and so on and so forth. I wanted to get excited. I like the Wicked Halo idea. I wanted to get excited about Echo Zulu after that Dogwood, but boy, it just seems like there's too many. There's a little too much to ask. I mean, not that an outside post is a huge problem going 7/8. It's an advantage, but I can't do it. I can't pull
slam
the trigger.
Slam draw on the rail. Really, I just think forces Florent's hand, and he's good from the gate. And boy, I just think I don't know if she's fast enough, but I think she'll be hustling as hard as she can. And yeah,
there's another filly in here that I actually had forgotten about until I saw John Sadler this morning. We were talking about the big horse and other things, and then Edgeway came up, and I remember her a couple years ago when she broke her maiden at Oaklawn, and she's kind of had a nice little career going, and she is sneaky, one of those horses that just kind of hangs around.
Another horse that's fresh, like Steve was saying, and coming off a really good win.
And she's very consistent. I mean,
that was a big effort to beat Slam. That was a really good stretch battle. You can make the case that, she holds her form, moves forward off of that race. I like her better than even CeCe, because I just think she's a lot more value per two. I think CeCe will be a little overbet. The other value I thought was a little bit interesting was Obligatory.
More than a little.
Yeah, I mean, she could definitely make, I thought, at least an impact for at least a minor award from off the pace.
Well, we'll use this as a chance to basically get through this entire field. You mentioned Slammed, who's going to have to go. Edgeway is going to at least gain forward position under Hernandez. Chi-Town Lady comes from off of it for Wesley. Flavian Pratt gets aboard for the first time and 20-1 plus. Last year's winner, CeCe, 4-1. Frank's Roquette also is coming in fresh, and she has been in basically an exacta participant going back to December, and is got a ton of things going for 6-1. The one little cautionary thing, and I'll write up my Saturday picks. The Friday picks are up. I'll write the Saturday up after the show today. The one thing that bothers me is the two visits to Keeneland without a board hit. And granted, it came in the TCA at the near the end of the year last year.
She had a tough post in that race.
She did, but I get it. The rail, nobody wants that. That was, and of course, the TCA is 3/4, not 7/8. But I'm not going to let that dissuade me. But Frank's Roquette and Obligatory Mott, we talked about it yesterday, poised for potentially a mammoth Breeders' Cup.
I can just give her some credit because I'm glad that Charlestown Oaks was run, or whatever that race was at Charlestown she was in, was run on Traverse Weekend, because that's the kind of horse I like to play against, especially at odds on with all those seconds. I'd see a horse 4 or 5 seconds in a row once again. There's a reason why they're running, typically as a better, and they can, but just to see her put it together, that's what I gave Malith that extra credit for, a spinster. You're talking about horses that are always in these tight finishes, and then all of a sudden they win by 5 or more lengths. Hey, they could be really moving forward. That's a positive sign.
Yeah, interesting idea. I'm using Chain of Love, the Japanese.
Me too. I read Kelly's analysis of her, and
there was more than just Kelly. There's also yesterday Mike Welch made a very interesting point about her essentially 2-minute lick yesterday, which included a sub 24 internal portion between poles. And I think she's going to be completely overlooked. The only negative might be, a groundswell, a tsunami of Japanese interest, just based on last year's success.
Yeah.
And the only horses that we didn't mention in the it's hard, but we try to mention every one. That Hot Peppers from Rudy Rod coming out of the Prioress in the test. She got a freshening. She seems a little outclassed in here. Sterling Silver. Tom Albertrani, a late runner. And, this could be one of those horses at 56-1 that finishes third or fourth and makes your super sing. The other one we should mention, we got Echo Zulu and Wicked Halo in. Wicked Halo being James's pick at 10-1. Lady Ruckett at 10-1. The other Frank Fletcher in here. This one trained though by Brad Cox.
I think those horses don't help Echo Zulu. I mean, she's got serious speed in post 10 and outside, like right next to her. With Hot Peppers and Lady Ruckett.
No doubt.
They're both just sending. I mean, whether they can make it or not, but they're sending.
There you go. All right. You want to go through things, or do you want
to
pick your prime picks?
Yeah, I'll go through. I mean, in the turf sprint, I do like Highfield Princess in there. I like the fact that she handles like five and a half furlongs, really relishes it, likes firm turf, is one around a left-handed turn. And her John Quinn's been pointing her to this race, for months. So, like a filly like that, that's, sort of a similar situation to Glass Slippers, where this race was always her target, and her form, got better, and Highfield Princess is way better form than Glass Slippers did. She's developed into the top sprinter in Europe.
I'm going to mention a horse that in the talks, it hasn't been mentioned a whole lot, and unless I'm seeing something missing, the trainer, Wesley Ward. I'm talking about Arrest Me Red.
He's got three in here. They're certainly going to get a good trip, Arrest Me Red.
Right? And, I just like the price at 15. Johnny V jumps on board.
He's won with her.
I know.
With him.
I know. And it's just an honest sort go, on this trip here. And he's won, $800,000, and it just kind of sits there. I mean, this is like a definite use for me, especially in a try situation. So I just haven't heard a whole lot about this horse. Took some time off, came to Kentucky Downs, ran third to Bran in a super, super tough race. And, you get fit there, coming off of there.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Wesley, this is a home game for him for sure, and this is his specialty. So I'm, obviously he's got the other one in there, but this one to me is
Two others in there.
He does have two others in there. But this one, I'm kind of quietly sitting in a good spot for me.
The horse that we got to get back to, we went through the Euros with Kelly Riley yesterday. Cazadero repeats that effort from Woodbine, and certainly there's going to be the pace. Flavian Pratt doesn't hurt, in terms of working out the swooping late run. So Cazadero and Casa Creed, are the two from off the pace that I'm absolutely using.
Moving on to Dirt Mile, that was a race. That's not going to be a race I'm going to be. I'll be using it in a multi-race situation. I do like Cyberknife sort of on the cutback to the two-turn mile, but obviously Laurel River concerns me as well. And, Cody's River, I just think it's a real competitive group there that's top-heavy. And it looks pretty salty between those three.
Yeah, I had to do this race for Steve's write-up, and I'll tell you what. Like I said, there's no need to lead horses in here, but there's speed. There's plenty of speed.
Right.
There's four of them that look like they're going to have it. Pipeline being one, he might be forcing it all gunite. He's going to be rolling. Laurel River, Cody's Wish. I mean, there could be some kind of duel and then a meltdown later for.
I could be wrong about Cody's Wish, but I do think that Cyberknife and Laurel River are going to be the top two betting choices. The thing with Cyberknife that worries me is that I could just see him running second. I mean, wouldn't it just be like such an epitome? He's like Gunrunner. Gunrunner ran, I think, fourth in the Penn Derby, and he cuts back to the Dirt Mile and runs second, and then Cyberknife does the same thing and then takes off at age four. Maybe I'm just asking.
No, I don't like the post. I was hoping I mean, if you like him, that he was inside a little bit. That's a tough draw out there for this race. But he's got, like, win written all over him. He's never run a mile, but it looks like this is right up his alley. So
Absolutely.
It kind of depends where he's going to lay. And I think he's going to need a little bit of a meltdown out front. I don't see him chasing too much, just kind of waiting. But this was a tough race to handicap.
To his credit, he has shown tactical foot and could be placed where he needs to be.
He's got I thought he bounced a little bit off that Travers. I thought he really dug in gamely to hold off Zandon and Rich Strike, and just was a little bit flat last time. But that could go either way, though, where he just could, you know. Maybe he won't bounce back to top form, or he could.
A couple of Q&As about some horses I do want to mention in this race. And, you know, obviously the ones everybody's talked about, including Laurel River and Cody's Wish. You mentioned Cyberknife. You know, Senior Buscador. Here's a horse that for Todd Fincher that it took a long time to get sound, and he now has got a string of starts and is coming off a career best last time and another step forward, or even pairing up to the effort at Churchill in the ACAC, gets him prominent in here.
The argument could be made for him that Edwin Maldonado wasn't a good fit. The Francisco area really fits him well. Did not like seeing him draw, though, post 10, per se.
Yeah, there's a horse that's being completely ignored that I haven't seen anybody mention about this race, not once. As it happens, Hammer, to his credit, was talking about Slowdown Andy. But another one in the Slowdown Andy mode is Law Professor. What exactly is wrong with the Woodward runner-up to Life is Good?
Right.
Coming in here for Rob Attriss, Jose Ortiz sticks. Jose Ortiz has had a lot of success, rode him for Michael W. McCarthy as well, and Law Professor. It seems far from impossible.
I would have liked to have seen him run better, though, in his last mile dirt start. I don't know. You know, you're right. I mean, he's not impossible because he's in good form. Those last two races have been
impressive. Well, the race at Oaklawn, put a line through the race at Oaklawn. I mean,
he looked good going into that race. He got stopped.
Okay.
Now, the last race was virtually a match race. In a sense, but he did, you know, he did run right up to Life is
Life
Good.
Life is Good.
Turner for Hall.
Well, to the point where some people came out of that race and said that I didn't like the Life is Good didn't look great winning the Woodward. Oh, okay,
he came up fast, but he hung.
I mean, he hung in there. He did not give it up.
Did.
So he looked good there. It was a sloppy track.
They came home fast that final quarter on that track too. The way how slow that track
totally
was
agree.
In the Woodward. I am though intrigued by Hammer's long shot a little.
Slow down, Andy.
To me, he is so eligible to get a favorable trip.
Right.
The one place you want to be in one turn dart races at Keeneland is inside because it is tight. It's a short run to the first turn and it's a short stretch at the finish. And he's got good tactical speed. I mean, he's an E8. I mean, I noticed that right away when I was looking at him. He's got speed, but, you know, I think he's quicker than Pipeline. And a lot of this other speed is, like, way outside in the starting gate. So even if he's sitting, if he's not on the lead, he's going to be up close. And I just think he could hang around and be in position to grab a minor award.
Right. And you know, that last race was sneaky good. Remember, he was running. That's the Breeders' Cup Classic Prep.
Well, it's the Woodward. That's why
I said
him and Law Professor,
you know,
looking almost identical coming into
this. You know, he chased a funded around there. I mean, he hung on. He hung on and, you know, only got beat three lengths. What's his name? Country Grammar in there, who's a, you know, he's a legitimate horse.
Sure.
And,
multiple grade
you know,
winner.
Actually, that's his best figure he's had, and he's headed in the right direction. As I always tell, people get tired of me hearing this, Doug O'Neill wins so many races just because the horse is ready to run, and let's put him in.
He finally got him turned around on that turf race because it wasn't he's not like a mile. He's putting him for the classics. He wasn't ready for those classics. And once he got that Del Mar Derby, it was a real confidence booster, you could say.
I mean, that shows a little class for horse. I mentioned here he had five starts. His first five starts were at five different racetracks. He won three of them. Then they throw him on the turf. He wins that. So he's got a little hidden class there. Not every horse can just you know, take to different services.
This is very, in a lot of ways, he's kind of a frank conversation type. Frank conversation ended up being more of a turf horse than a dirt horse. He's probably more a dirt horse than a turf horse. If I'm not mistaken, Doug O'Neill won this 2 years in a row with Golden Sense, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. So Doug O'Neill knows what kind of a horse, style-wise and tactical-wise and everything else, can win this race.
Allendorfer sent that horse to Kentucky. Who was that horse he sent, that big bomber that won the – did it win? Or
yeah, it won. It came – oh, yeah, absolutely. It was at Churchill. I still can't talk because of that. I think I had the all button in that race.
Yeah, he beat the big favor for Zito that was cutting back.
Yeah, he just won by a lip.
First or something.
Great. I forget his name. And then he won it again. Did Battle of Midway win this race?
I think he did, actually. Well, Battle of Midway, yes.
He beat
Sharp Azteca in that thrilling finish at Del Mar.
Yeah.
He beat Sharp Azteca by a nose.
That's right.
Yeah. There's two other horses that are going to be prominent throughout that we should at least include in this conversation. One is Pipeline.
Yeah.
What's wrong exactly with Pipeline coming in here? And the other is Gunite. Steve Asmussen was with me, 48 hours after Gunite's win in the Perryville, and I asked him, how will you make the decision? We're going to run in the Breeders' Cup. I mean, he said, unless something goes sideways from here forward, he was committed to, and he said, we'll go to the Breeders' Cup and we'll go to the Dirt Mile. So
he's got that recency and improving form.
And a one-for-one over the surface, right, which goes a long way.
The only horse in there that's won at Keeneland, by the way.
In the group.
In that group. And there's only, I think, three or four that have even...
Pipeline
even
was
run,
third in the Perryville
run at
last
Keeneland.
Year. Huh?
Barbara.
The only other horse we should slip in here, I think we got every informative, of course, Uriah St. Louis. Good for him for being here. He's something. Simplification has come up. Three Technique, Jason Cook, which is a wonderful story. And I don't think he's doomed from the 11. But
this race is at Churchill. You know. He likes Churchill.
There you go. All right. Moving on.
Dakota Phone.
Yeah. Good job.
I had to look it up.
Be Morning On. That was the Zito horse.
Oh, wow. Wow. Well, James, you Philly Mare Turf, or do you want to?
You know, Philly Mare Turf, I take a hard look at all Nashua above the curve and Tuesday, and I'm going to go with Tuesday in there. I do, as far as Americans or North America, I respect Rougier because that filly's on the upswing and it's going to offer some value. I like a horse like that's sort of off form and then maybe gets back in form. So I thought she was a little intriguing. And, of course, in Italian, you've got to respect her speed on the front end. We've seen Intercontinental and other fillies just get out there that you thought, hey, maybe might not get the distance, and they just leave wire to wire.
All right. Let's get to the sprint. And what's your verdict on Jackie's Warrior?
I think, I'm just like, when I took a close look at this, I'm just like, hey, I mean, if somebody doesn't run with him, it's going to be awfully hard to beat him. And it looks like he has the chance to potentially get clear, and it'd be trouble. Of course, if he did, come up a little short, if he wasn't, at 100% for some reason, would be that I'm intrigued by in there is Elite Power. Once again, there's a horse to me that is rapidly improving at the right time of year. I didn't even know if Mott would run him, in the Vosburgh. That was his first stakes race. And, boy, he couldn't have been more bullish after the race and just, had a lot of positive things. I see that horse as having a huge upside. I think a horse like Aloha West last year was a good example where, getting beat a nose in his final prep was really the indicator he was sitting on a good effort. And I could see that with that Vosburgh performance by Elite Power.
Yeah, I wrote down Sleeper by Elite Power. I could see him just kind of getting lost in the shuffle and maybe even drifting up a little bit.
So if I was going to play Jack Hughes Warrior in a straight exact, I'd definitely be looking at those will pays, because I do think that Kamari and some others will definitely be a shorter price.
Well, and the sprint starts the late pick five, and one of the real challenges that's come up, we've brought this up the last week, actually, when we went through things with Jim Goodman. The sprint ends up being the anchor leg of the first Breeders' Cup pick five, races 3 through 7, and then the opening leg of the last pick five that takes you to the Classic. So your sprint opinion needs to be distinct, and it needs to be clear. You got to lay out your win contenders and figure out how you're going to work your approach on either side of the two pick fives, if that's what you're going to do. Hammer, one question for you, looking at some of the mid-price types in here. American Theorem, this is one of those horses when he jumped up and won, was it the Pat O'Brien or whatever
Crosby.
The Crosby, thank you. When he jumped up and won, you thought, oh, that's nice for Papa Padromo. Then he goes on with it, and you suddenly say to yourself, this is not an aberration.
No, and if you go way back, way back, at the start of his career, he was running him against when he was a early 3-year-old. He thought a lot of him.
Yep.
He ran a good race, and then he actually shipped him out to Oaklawn to run in one of the Breeders' Cup preps, and he didn't do so good. But he's never given up hope on his horse. He's always thought about it. And then, like you said, well, what's going on here? When he started running him smaller, we're running him shorter, and then he pops off. He wins the Triple Bend. Right? Yeah. Okay. So you go.
That's probably what he got lucky. Yeah. That was.
And then when you win the Bing Crosby, that's a big race to win out there. That's the only Grade One in California sprint right now. And then follows that up with a pretty darn good effort against Lowell River going 7/8. At first you go and no, he's another one that's going to hide. That he's maybe can't do it, but. I'm going to use the theory that, hit them when they're hot. And he's on a roll right now. And, he might be one of those users that down below. And he's 10-1. And he could drift up with Joe on him, Joe Bravo.
I'm intrigued. The only other major win candidate is Kamari. Mm-hmm. as well. And if we're looking for another oddball price type, and when we were here 2 years ago, there was that horse of Terry Off's that I was so excited about with Declan Carroll, and he ran he ran very well.
That the Minnesota horse?
No, not Minnesota. Minnesota, or was it Minnesota?
So he placed behind.
He was ended up fourth.
Whitmore.
Yes. Well, yes, and oh my gosh, it was a big prize. I've got it here somewhere, but if there's a horse like that in here, it's Willie Boy. Chantal Sutherland, since getting together with Willie Boy, Chantal won 3 straight at Tampa, and then the big drama, and then the smile. Then went to Saratoga and ended up placing behind Jackie and Knee Deep in Snow. In the Vanderbilt, this is like a Calder horse, essentially, coming to Saratoga, and running well. And I Willie Boy is going to be 1,000,000-1, and has got the potential to be that that giant price in the exotics in the sprint.
He can bring it too. He can wing it up from the gate and being fresh like that. He's. Don't know if he'll be next to Jackie's Warrior, being one spot outside him, but he's going to be forward.
And can absolutely, and basically, people look at horses that are typically in on or near the lead, and they think, well, they're not going to get the lead. Well, if you're outside, if you're outposted, the open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear, the Marty McGee. If there's no kickback coming, if they're out in the open, even if they're sitting third, they're quite happy that way. It's a different story when you're in the 2-3
have
four
all
pack.
The options in the world.
Exactly.
There.
Yeah. So I just that's one of those horses that you don't want to. You know, I don't want to wake up Sunday morning and say, Jesus, I never even didn't even bring this Willie boy up. So just one of those asides. Moving into the late pick for the mile, James.
I give Modern Edge the edge
modern
there.
Games.
You know, I mean, Modern Games the edge there, and you know, I definitely respect Kinross. You know, the horse I'm going to use in there at a price, you know, underneath, and you know, we'll mix in some. Horizontals is
Empire of Gold
is Malavath, and the reason why is because I know there's like a little bit of concern, you know, that was really soft ground when she ran second to Kinross, but I saw that. I just think that after winning a Group 3 to open the year, she went off form. I mean, obviously she's running in like a classic and ran poorly, but then she runs 4-2 back and then second last time to Kinross. She's moving forward at the right time. And the thing that encourages me is that she shipped to Del Mar last year and was dead last early, got checked, and ran second, a half length second on firm ground to Pizza Bianca. I think she's gained a ton of seasoning and experience. You know, you look at her form last year in Europe before she came over and ran second. You know, she had never faced, like, really quality fillies. She's done that now in quality males as well. And is coming
against them. I think I've bet against them both times in the last two Breeders' Cup unsuccessfully. Maybe third time's the charm. I do love Highfield Princess. Superb quality sprinter from Europe who's going to sit right behind him, and I think she's got the class to run him down. So Highfield Princess is my top pick there. Long shot for underneath is Wesley Ward's other horse, to Arrest Me Red, who has a pretty sparkling turf sprint record in America. You know, his only one off the board performance was over the Keeneland Turf, but that was a two-turn race when he was a juvenile. So Arrest Me Red is my kind of try kicker in that race.
Yeah, can't argue.
Onto the dirt mile. Like James said in your previous segment, it's kind of a top-heavy race. Cody's Wish, 5-2. You know, after he won the Four Ghost Stakes, I thought he'd probably be a, you know, stronger candidate to stay in one turn. Seven for a long mile races, but then I went back and looked at that two-turn performance early in the year at Tampa Bay Downs, and I thought that was a really good second in the Challenger Stakes. There's a lot of speed in this race, and I think even a two-turn mile could set it up for him, and I would expect his odds to float up from the 5-2 morning line, so Cody's Wish looks pretty good to me there.
Very good. It's a nice story.
Filly and mare turf, I'm leaning heavily on the two European 3-year-old turf fillies, Nashua and Above the Curve. I thought they both ran really good races in the Prix de l'Opera last time. Nashua has won more, you know, prestigious events this year. She's battle tested against the best in the division over there, and even though she's cutting back a little bit to a mile and 3/16, I think Gosden has been kind of pointing for this race all year long, and he's bringing a very top and tough contender. Then the next race is the sprint. You know, obviously not the deepest collection of sprinters we've seen in this country this year. Jackie's Warrior, you know, if he puts in his typical performance, he should win this on paper. But you know, he has disappointed twice in the last two Breeders' Cups as an odds-on favorite, granted with some excuses. But if there's a horse, I think, if you want to take a stand against him, I would look at American Theorem, the Southern California horse, who has just really developed since concentrating on one-turn sprints during the summer and fall. I thought his performance in the Bing Crosby was excellent. And so if you want to take a stand against a Jackie's Warrior starting out in your pick fives, pick fours, or whatever, American Theorem has to be included in that conversation. The mile, is probably the race I'm looking forward most to watching, because I just find it's a fascinating and deep race. Modern Games, the favorite, obviously, has shown what he can do at Woodbine and at Del Mar last year. I was a bit surprised he ran in the QE2 last time. I thought the connections were going to just go straight from Woodbine to here. I don't know if that was the best move or not. We'll find out. But I think the increased possibility of some precipitation on Saturday could potentially hurt Modern Games a little bit. And that's why I'm kind of leaning towards the other major European performer, Ken Ross, who's, his good to soft form has been excellent in recent months. I think he should get a mile much more easily here than he could overseas. So he will have to overcome post 13 here. It's a really bad draw for him. But as a value play, I think Ken Ross is the horse to back in this. As far as some price horses in here, Order of Australia, obviously proven over the Keeneland turf after upsetting the mile a couple of years ago. Didn't run well. And then ran pretty good prep last time in the Coolmore Turf Mile. So I would throw Order of Australia underneath. And then I thought Domestic Spending's entry in this race after such a long layoff was still an intriguing move by Chad Brown. Let's not forget he was the best turf horse in the country last year, heading into the Breeders' Cup when he was unfortunately scratched from the turf. There's plenty of class to suggest he can make his presence felt here, even in a minor slot capacity. So I wouldn't sleep on Domestic Spending.
Agree.
In the distaff, in the intramural battle between Nest and Malathat, I'm going to join probably the larger chorus and go for Nest. I've always been somewhat suspicious of Malathat. I thought last year's distaff at Del Mar was really her prime opportunity to win that race, especially based on how the race developed, and she just didn't get the job done that day. And her form since then, has been a little bit uneven, but she is coming into the race obviously very strong. But Nest, I think, has turned into a really, really top-class three-year-old filly, one of the best we've had in recent years. And I think I just give her the edge over her stablemate. And among the others, Search Results as a filly has just been a little unlucky, falling just a bit short of Malathat. Numerous times they faced each other, but she's going to give her all in this race, even at a mile and eighth, which perhaps is just a bit beyond her best distance. But so I'm certainly keen on doing like a Nest Search Results, so cold exacta in that race.
Takes us to the late double.
Late double, as everybody has been saying, this is not a vintage renewal of the turf, and I think it certainly runs through the Godolphin pair, and I will side with the younger three-year-old Nation's Pride here, who's well-versed in American racing so far, proved he can get a mile and a half comfortably at Aqueduct last time, and he shattered Pebbles's course record winning that race. Granted, there hasn't been too many top-class mile-and-a-half turf races run at Aqueduct since Pebbles won that, but just the fact that he was able to, so easily accomplish that feat, I was very impressed by, even though, the field behind him was a bit suspect. Charlie Appleby has been highest on him going into the race over Revel's Romance, so I'm going to take his word for it and back Nation's Pride in the turf. And as far as the classic, we got a huge favorite, and it's hard to go against Flightline. He looks like one of the obviously one of the top plays of the weekend. And as far as the choosing a horse to put him in top the exact over, I think Taba has really come on strong for Baffert in the last few months. He looks like he's got this horse totally cranked to run a huge effort. I think he's the now horse among the three-year-olds, and so a cold exacta for me, Flightline over Taba to conclude a what should be a fascinating Breeders' Cup.
Vance Hansen, everybody, VP Hansen, and Vance, best of luck. I appreciate it as always, and look forward to catching up again soon. Good to see you last night.
Thanks. Have a great Breeders' Cup.
Vance Hansen, everybody, as we call him, the Quiet Assassin. And as James mentioned, you've got the piece he did at Twin Spires and the blog roll. Let's take our only break of the morning. We got Tom Law standing by. Jay Pribden is going to swing through as well. And we'll get Tom's opinions. And he doesn't have Shapazian to spar with in this particular circumstance. So he's unencumbered. He's relaxed. And the Turf Riders dinner is behind him. And so now there's just... this is horseracing.com work to be done. Right, Tom?
Mid-Atlantic Thoroughbred, Horseman's Journal, and New York Thoroughbred Breeders.
Other than that, you're not that busy. Tom Wall, we'll be right back. Saratoga TL joins us next. Jay Pribden is going to come by before the two of them get the Turf Riders and Broadcasters meeting conducted at 11 o'clock. And we keep having these meetings when I'm on the air, whether we're at Derby or whether we're here, so I never get to participate.
Strategic.
Exactly, because I'm one of those people who, you know, I'm like a Karen at a school board meeting.
Raise a stink, and then the meeting takes an hour longer. I got to get to lunch.
He's a disruptor.
Not really, actually.
He is a Karen.
Well, all I've ever wanted was I've got one thing in mind for our organization, and that's the Historic Preservation Committee, which nobody ever engages. We never get that rolling. We got to roll to the break right now, and we'll come right back. Case, let's take a short break. If we could, all right? And we'll come right back to Keeneland. Second half this morning, Dave Hill's going to join us. We'll get some opinions from Dave and slip in a quick football note from him as well. Dave is now sitting at 61-61 midway through the season. He's been treading water in the last several weeks. Seth Merrow as well. We'll get a call into him. We'll probably get a Rich Eng call and probably another surprise visit between now and noon. Back after this, at the races, at the Breeders' Cup. Coming to you live from Cleveland, Rick Hammerly, and Cast of Thousands. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Beck on Sirius XM Radio.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting